Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited, because with us today, we have Manfred Heiss. Manfred is the founder of My Auto Data and the president of Maud Incorporated. Manfred, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the invite.
Our pleasure. So why don't we get started? If you can give us a little bit of background on My Auto Data and Maud, that'd be a great starting point.
Well, I try and keep this brief. My Auto Data is a company that was founded by me and another buddy in Munich, Germany, in 2019. My Auto Data was too difficult to pronounce. So we said we do it like SAP and IBM, we abbreviate it and call it MOD. So MOD is much easier to pronounce than My Auto Data. And since then, everybody talks about MOD. So it was founded back then and with my frustration, first of all, right? I was frustrated. I've been in the software and the automotive business for all my life. I started my career at BMW in 81, wrote some of the first computer programs for BMW. And Believe it or not, there were no databases available back then. There was, of course, not even mobile phones, but still that was a very interesting, most interesting time. And what they called it, there was also not the term IT. What they called it was electronic data processing, EDP. And it's the same what it still is today, right? So the terminology has changed, but the topic is always the same, electronic data processing. So yeah, that is how I actually, a little bit about my background. And the idea to found that company is because of the frustration that I faced when it came to my personal data. I've been involved in so many different projects at Oracle, at BMW, at Hewlett Packard, and with some large management consulting companies, where they actually tried brought customer projects to me. And I said, you know, this is how we help the customers. But what I figured out, soon actually was they did not have the customers. The customers actually did not benefit from any of these projects. They benefited because they wanted to make the customer their lifetime customer. So it was all about the customer, but from a different perspective, from a company perspective, and not from a consumer perspective. And since we all know data processing, as I just mentioned, it's all about data. And data has always been big business, and data is huge, and in particular today, I believe data is humanity's most valuable asset. Big companies are making huge profits, Facebook, you name them, right? But guess what? All at the expense of us, the consumers, our data. It's our data that they use and they make billions from it. So I thought to myself, you know, with all this experience and the idea, why cannot actually the data owner benefit also from that data? So not only the big companies, it needs to be a fair approach. Why cannot everybody benefit from that? And as long as I thought about it, I said, well, we have to change that. I have to change it for myself. And I said, how can I do this? So I started thinking about it and experimented a lot of things with different things and ended up with creating a data vault in the cloud, where my personal data was nicely categorized and structured. And that is data about my static data. We call it static data. Static data is data about your vehicle ownership, like your insurance policy, the data from your garage bills, all kind of contracts like your lease contract, your purchase contract, your demographics, that kind of things. Then your customer experience, right? How happy am I with my insurance? How happy am I with my garage, with the service that they did, and so on. Then lastly, and most importantly, also the dynamic data. The dynamic data is data that changes frequently, and that is data that occurs when you start driving your car. When you drive your car, it generates data, and today, about 25 gigabytes per hour are actually withdrawn from the OEMs, stored on their back ends, and sold. Sold for whoever pays good money for that, right? So that's why we said, okay, we have to cover these three things: static data, customer experience, and dynamic data. And we structured this nicely, and we created the technology for people to manage and control and manage their own data in this data world.
That was
the beginning of it, okay?
I have a whole bunch of questions. Let's start in no particular order. Who does the driver or the owner of the automobile own the data? Or is
per
it
privacy, per privacy laws? I think the most representative one is the GDPR in Europe and the California Consumer Privacy Act. They are very strict and very clear that the person who generates the data is the owner of the data. Doesn't mean he possesses the data, but he owns the data. And the problem is that nobody knows basically that other than the OEMs, because they believe it's their data. Same thing is true for insurance companies, etc. So they know that this is not their data, but they're making it difficult for us consumers to access that data. And that's why they can still, you know, make big money with our data. So that's the idea about using the privacy laws and saying, if we are the owner of that data, only we can actually allow access to the data in a legally correct, or at least ethically correct, way. So I can allow access to my data because I am the data owner, and I can give my consent for that. Nobody else can do that, right? So and that's why companies are struggling with approaching customers with all kinds of things, marketing and advertising stuff, because they are not they don't have the consent of the owners, and that's one big hurdle for all of them.
Is there a certain year that cars or automobiles in general started the transition to the point where the manufacturers were in possession of this data?
Yeah, that year was 2018. 2018 in Europe, at least, was the year when the European Commission asked the OEMs to put a so-called emergency call in the car. And an emergency call is a button or that you can press, or in case of an accident, of course, it's like your Apple Watch. If you fell, then it releases an emergency call. And that was the beginning. So they had to bring in a technology like SIM cards at the beginning, and now some other technologies, integrated things, where they actually are able, all these newer cars are able to communicate and to take that data from the sensors in the car. There's about 80 to 100 sensors in the car, to take that data through the air and report and store it on the back ends of this. So, but now give me, I have to add something which is really, really important. 2018 was the year. There's about 1.5 billion cars on our road globally. 1.5 billion, growing at about 90 million every year. So guess what? About 500,000 of these cars are connected, and about 1 billion cars is not connected. So nobody gets any information, no dynamic information from all of these cars. It's a huge gap for cities, for environmental purposes, for sustainability, mobility issues, a lot of things that is basically, but it's an unknown. It's a huge gap that I'm currently discussing with the UK, by the way. So that is the answer to your question. This is only about 1/3 of the cars being connected on our roads, and the other 2/3 is a total unknown.
Interesting. This is a little bit in the weeds, but I'm curious. So I heard you mention that in an hour, it can create 25 gigs of information. How is there a general default for cars if they're simply, in a place where there's no satellite connection? Does that information get lost, or how much gets stored within the car?
I believe they tell you they don't really store data in the car, but they do.
Oh, interesting.
And of course, it's not only the OEMs. They work very closely with the big IT giants like Google and with some of the huge telecoms. And they store this data temporarily. And then, if there's no GPS, for instance, they know how to actually bridge this gap, right? And then we have the same situation because what we do is the same thing. Our technology uses also GPS, but this is private now, right? So instead of giving that information to anyone, it's ending up in your data vault, as I just mentioned before. So this data that you, when you drive your car, the driving behavior, how you drive your car, where you drive, the geolocations, all this fancy, nice, very important data is uploaded to your data vault. It's only uploaded by yourself. It's done automatically, but you are the only one who has the key to that data vault. And we have to say, facing the same thing. If this is a long tunnel where there is no GPS, well, we have to figure out a way. And I don't want to tell you now how this looks because probably too far. We have to find out what we're going to do. Also, if there is no internet connections available, for instance, to upload that data. So yes, I just tell you what we do. We really store it on the phone temporarily, and as soon GPS and internet is available, it really uploads it one by one. Historically, the oldest one, and so on. So that's it. That is what we do. But OEMs, they don't use phones like we do. So they store it somewhere on a in the car somewhere. I cannot tell you where. It's probably different from OEM to OEM.
Makes sense. So, let's talk about, if we can, value proposition for the consumers. What are some of the bigger ones that you realize by giving them access to this information?
Well, there is a lot of benefits for the consumers. I think the most important one for the consumer is, and that has been verified by consumers, by thousands of consumers actually, who read some of the press releases in the newspaper, in several newspapers in Germany, that's the money. So monetization. How can we really compete with Zuckerberg or the OEMs or whoever? They take our data and they sell it. Why can we not do this ourselves and sell our data ourselves? So that is the biggest thing. But on the other hand, it's also a lot of analytics included in our solution that and even with some AI that this provides the consumer with cost savings, with environmentally tips for environmentally driving and that kind of thing. So and about all these costs and simulations, even forecasts, how much is my vehicle going to cost me in the next 100 days or something like that. But there's a lot of additional features that we built in that is interesting. And the other thing is also that people can not just make money, they can also save money. And saving money is when it comes to, we haven't talked about this yet, but it's the marketplace. So when I open my data and I, for instance, as a driver, as a vehicle owner, I know best when I need something for my car. I know best when I need a new set of tires, or if I'm tired of my insurance and I want a new insurance. Only I know this. So we said, okay, let's put this, the consumers has now a choice. Have now a choice. They can click a button on what they are interested in, and this shoots out an anonymous lead to, let's say, the insurance companies if this person is interested in insurance. And the insurance companies on that marketplace, approved insurance companies, every company is approved. So they will then respond and say, okay, I'm interested in this lead. But when they're interested in this lead, they have to pay for access to that person's data. So let's make an example. Let's say you are interested in your insurance, you hit the button, 10 insurance companies says, oh, that's a nice lead, I like that. then they access your data. And in the very moment they access your data, before they have seen it, they have to pay you. So they pay you and the money, you can keep all this money, the lead money that you got, if you at the end of the day select one of the insurances as a new insurer. So that means you make money by asking for a for receiving an offer, but also you save money because you probably pick the lowest premium, and you save time because instead of going Googling and go shopping, you press one button and the insurance companies respond to you. So that's a big advantage, I believe, for the consumers. But there's also some other advantages, like you can really, as a consumer, when you allow access to your data, and you can individually allow access to every single data field, totally up to you. Everything is up to you, to the consumer, to the vehicle owner. You can actually help the environment by saying, hey, I provide my data for mobility studies, for mobility strategies. So a city knows what is really going on our roads, because as of now, we just mentioned, one third of the cars is connected. The cities don't even get the information from the connected vehicles. And of course, they don't get it from non-connected vehicles. But now, with this new technology, they get all the information about the drivers participating in such projects, connected and non-connected cars, and they know what's going on their road. You know, how many short trips are going, how much are they spending on time, how much spending on money, how much carbon emissions are they blown in the air, what is the time when they drive, you know, what's going on weekends, and all these kind of things is very, very basic information that every city should actually first put in place before they start a mobility project, right, on a new strategy. Because it could come out that, oh, maybe, if you put people don't take that road or take that road because there is no bus route in place or something like this. There can a lot of conclusions that cities can do. And we did a project like this in Germany, with a German city. The nice thing is you help the city and you help the environment, but you get even paid because again, the principle is if somebody accesses your data, no matter who, you get paid. So the city paid for this data and the people made about 200 euros in the 3 months project. So all they had to do is sign up on the system, take the app, drive, and the city would then say, I have access to all their trips. I pick certain one, and that's a simple thing to do. But it proves two things. It's very interesting information that you, as a vehicle owner, nobody else has that information in one single place, that you have that information that is very, very valuable to cities, to all kind of companies, and it's valuable for you because now you can carry it with you on your mobile phone. You can lock and unlock your data, you can monetize, you can save money with that, and you can actually contribute towards a greener environment. So that is the main advantage for the consumers. While the benefits for the marketplace partners, for the businesses, are even greater than the ones for the consumers. I think the most important ones is something that every company struggles with, which is the privacy laws. In the US, privacy laws are growing like mushrooms. It's not California and Colorado anymore. 20 different states have actually brought up their bringing new privacy, tough privacy laws for the consumer's protection. So that means that applying and complying to these laws is essential. And that is a benefit for us as Mod, but for companies, who really would need the consent of the person, they would now get this. So what we do just is basically we turn privacy into an opportunity, because now the consumers are the consent givers, and the companies can use that and have now legally and ethically correct access to all that data that the consumer wants to share with them. I think that's the one big opportunity that should not be missed. That's really big, because marketing is a big part of business. And again, it's now one-on-one marketing is now something that can be done without any running any risk for privacy complaints. The other thing is, of course, when they now have access to your data, they can build target groups, right? And these target groups, they can pick actually any kind of group that they like to find out information. Let's make a simple example. I'm an insurance company on the marketplace, and I'm interested in finding all the unhappy insurance companies, the insured users, right? So I just actually need to access these people's customer rating for their insurance, and it gives me a list and say, okay, these are the people who rated their insurance company with 2 or 3 stars. So I get this list, and now I have, let's say, 100 unhappy insurance customers, and now I can actually create an advertisement and tell these people, hey, you communicated that you're not happy with your insurance. This is what we do. So you use YouTube video, PDF, pictures, regular text, put this together. So you design your own advertisement and press one button and it shoots it out to these users. And these users then get this in, not per email, but in their dashboard, that's a special area on their dashboard, and I can look it up and say, oh yeah, that's interesting. So this is how you generate interest without paying a lot of marketing money for this. In terms of an insurance, that would be, okay, you now get access to people driving things. So you know beforehand what kind of customers you're gonna get in. So is this a risky customer or a less risky customer? And all this information is already there before a contract is signed. So this is the way how you can do with free advertisements. And again, if a company or if a person is interested, let's stick with this insurance example, in a new insurance, they get this lead, they get a lead from, and they don't need anything. There is no insurance agency involved. There is no middleman involved. They don't need any hardware, no software, no license. They get this lead on their portal that we give them, and then they can start communicating as soon as they have access data and paid for the data. An open communication channel is opened, messaging, and then they can exchange whatever they want to say until the deal is either done or not done, and then the communication channel closes. So in other words, they can acquire new customers. They can use this data to find out what are people's requests and demands and what are the trends. And they can use this to build personal tailored services for them. And all together, they can even identify new business opportunities there. And that's, in a nutshell, that's really a lot of things that they don't have today. And that's what Malt brings to the table without them only paying for the data, for the user's data and nothing else.
I mean, it's a material ROI, and you can absolutely see, given the costs, which sounds like are de minimis, that why a business would want to participate in this. I mean, it's brilliant. I'm curious, has the marketplace matured to the point where there are ratings or scores that are assigned to individual consumers' data to assist, you know, like define value, like this person drives a lot or this person doesn't drive at all?
No solution is perfect, a good solution is never finished, right? Because what we do today is only the beginning. It's the beginning of a huge movement, personal data management. And automotive data is only the beginning, but it's already, that is very big, which has a global value of about a market opportunity of $1.9 trillion every year. That's the value of that personal automotive data. So that means in terms of a consumer, that has a value of about $1,400 per vehicle owner. So in other words, if your vehicle has a value of the data, your vehicle has a value of $1,400, and it's yours and you manage that, right? If you allow access to certain things, you can make up to, I would say, up to $1,000 a year. But again, as I said, personal data in automotive, it's only, it is a huge disruption, I agree. and it's a revolution in changing the way automotive data and customer data is handled. But that's the future. So everybody really likes the idea. And even governments are supporting it, German government, British government, the EU, European Commission. So there's a lot of interest, even the big IT organizations. We get financial help from NVIDIA and from AWS. So they help us paying our hosting costs at AWS. And again, so that Microsoft was very interested in it. We had a contract with SAP, which I canceled because I figured out that they wanted to sell our users' data, which is, I said, no, there's no way. This is not how it works, right? Our users are the masters and the owners of their own data. And if they want to sell data, it's not really selling. That's the other thing. Selling means it goes away from you. We don't want that, right? We want to continue being the owner of our data. So all we do is we allow access to that data, but it's not going away. Because when it goes from A to B, from B to C, it's out of your control. So that's how we deal with it.
I'm really curious to hear if you've reached a point yet where you started to incorporate blockchain in order to ensure that consumers retain custody of their information. And if not, is it on the horizon?
Blockchain, that's a great topic. Right now, we have several databases where this is really top secure. The highest emphasis was on data privacy and security, and this is in place today. But we still want to add a blockchain and a special cryptocurrency, which we even have a name for that, which I don't want to pronounce or actually publish at this point in time. But what this is really, instead of the users receiving cash, they can choose to pick to receive this cryptocurrency. But the transactions that are done, they have to be stored in the blockchain. So the wallets, all this data from the transactions are stored in the blockchain, and the original data is stored where it's stored.
Yeah.
And the idea of using this is for a special thing. Here we are going into towards sustainability area, because I was invited in at large conferences in Amsterdam and with McKinsey about what can we do to battle climate change. So climate change topics, and I told everybody, companies can only do so much, right? But consumers, they are the real people with the power. They can do much more than any company, even Amazon and Walmart together, because they have the power and they can change things. So what can we do to get the consumers to contribute to a greener environment? As there is only one way, and that's the key thing. And it's exactly incentives, financial incentives. So we come up with the idea of a financial incentive system. That means if the user says, I'm going to pick that cryptocurrency, they will receive a cryptocurrency for their data, but the cryptocurrency has a limited use. They can only use it to pay for environmentally friendly transportation. Let me make you an example. I like these things. Or like, let's say, here in the US in particular, I just look out of my window. There's a lot of pickup trucks, 6-8-cylinder engines, right? Not really the most environmentally friendly cars. So the idea is to say, hey, Friday evening is pub day. I go to my pub, I meet my friends. I want a couple of beer and have a good time. instead of using my pickup truck, I call an electric Uber and I pay this guy with my crypto. And the guy takes me down and I can drink as much as I want. I don't have to look for a parking spot. And same thing back home. So this has not just this convenient aspect. It has also the aspect that your big 6 or 8 cylinder pickup truck will stay in the garage, right? And when it stays in the garage, it doesn't contribute to traffic, doesn't contribute to carbon emissions. And it probably the likelihood that there's less deadly accidents and people drink and drive is also reduced. And that's the idea. If you scale this up and people are saying, well, I do, this is just a short trip. And I'm thinking about Miami or the other mega cities where you, first of all, get stuck in traffic, then you get stuck in, or you pay $35 valet parking for a few hours. That is all gone away because I have this electric or any other means of green transportation. Doesn't have to be a electric Uber or electric car. It can be micro mobility. It can be all kind of other ideas. And that's why I was saying earlier, we need to build that network. This is so partnership network. This is so vital and important. So then that will push, that will give a big push. First of all, we will have very quickly, we have very quickly an effect if people don't drive these cars anymore and they use others, we have this effect within a short amount of time. And so what it also pushes is, gives a push to the industry to bring more environmentally friendly cars on the road and people sharing their cars, right? So like today it's Uber, but Uber and there's a few other ride-sharing companies, but that would give a push towards this sustainability and towards this green efforts.
You know, I would imagine that as we continue to see autonomous cars, that we get closer to this vision of, you know, being conscious of options when we have to travel, whether it's, you know, calling a ride share or doing a, you know, a co-share with somebody else. I'm curious, so 6 years into the company, what was your experience with approaching product market fit? Did you always have a clear vision, and if not, you know, how did it evolve?
Well, the vision is very, very bold, right? So we want to really, we want to empower people and companies to both benefit from personal data. And that starts with automotive, but think about everybody else, like you are a patient, you have a property and this and that, and all this personal data is out somewhere. It's not under your control. If that would be centralized under your head and under your control, that could change the world. And it would be very interesting for you because it would give you a lot at the end of the day, even some wealth, but at least it would push, it would have a big impact socially and environmentally, but also economically. And that is the idea at the, in the long run, is to really create this big organization that will outgrow Meta at one point in time. But how do we get there? So we have this chicken and the egg problem, like every person, that the whole thing is a, the whole solution is an ecosystem, a platform consisting of the data vault and the marketplace, but it's in one ecosystem. So you have the chicken and the egg thing. If you have so-and-so, like say, a million users, but only 5 marketplace partners who would be interested in connecting, that is what we do. First of all, I need to mention, it's very important, we are data trusty. We don't sell any data, we are data trusty, right? So that's the one thing. But the other thing is that if companies access that data, then big enough yet in terms of data, right? So then it doesn't make sense if there's a million drivers and only 5 companies requesting data. The users will not be happy because they don't make that kind of money that they want to make. Vice versa, the same thing, right? So if you have 100 users and 500 marketplace partners, dealerships, it's not giving them a lot of great information. So that's the things that you struggle. And what we want to do is that after a while, there was a lot of mistakes and things. The biggest mistake that I made was start big, right? Do things. And until the former CFO of BMW, a friend of mine said, who was involved in the whole thing, he gave me advice at the beginning. Said, Manfred, you know, you've got everything, the whole thing is set up and it's already developed, but it's going to kill you because it's just too complex and you need to focus. So focus means focus on at least the marketplace partners, focus on insurance companies, focus on OEMs, focus on dealerships and the repair shops, and focus on cities and auto clubs. And that's already a lot. So if you can get them, and they have a lot of users, so try, and actually the AAA would be a wonderful example. They have more than 60 million members. So if you say, hey, AAA, you become a marketplace partner, we cooperate, and you tell your users that there is a nice, interesting service which doesn't really cost you a dime, then they would sign up for that, and you would actually have the luxury of getting more information from your users, because it's still, they are your customers, but again, they also have different cars and they have different data that you could actually benefit from. So that was the approach, but that was a bit slow. The new approach to shorten this a little is, the new approach is say, hey, why should we focus only on a few automotive related industries? That doesn't really make a lot of sense. So we can say, hey, Walmart, Visa, MasterCard, T-Mobile, you name all these huge corporates, they have millions and millions hundreds of millions of users. And guess what? They don't have to do anything with automotive, but their customers are probably drivers, right? Most of them. So if they bring them as affiliate marketing partners, we would actually pay them a fee, but they would then do advertisement for us with their customers, which are drivers. So they would sign up this. So that's the one idea to say, okay, let's just use affiliate marketing as one big vehicle to do effective marketing. That's the approach. But on the other hand, the marketplace partner, we need to grow them at the same time. I'm not sure if I can talk publicly about this in details, but we want to focus on projects like mega cities, that what I was telling you before with the German city. But at the same time, we're going to focus on very few, on a smaller amount of dealerships and in a particular state. So in the US, we want to focus, instead of saying, hey, the whole wild world, 25 markets, or the US as a market, we just focus on California. There's enough drivers in California. There is privacy laws, very tough ones in California. And you've got a lot of dealerships and auto companies in California. If we start there, then we can actually already generate very interesting numbers in terms of revenues, in terms of revenues for the drivers, in terms of data available for the marketplace partner, which are the dealerships. And once this is successful, and it can go very quickly, because some of the dealerships already committed that they like this very much, so they would support us, then we spread this out to the United States first. And then we replicate the thing in Germany and in the UK and Canada and other markets. So that's how we approach this. That's basically our go-to-market strategy. Yeah.
And so for budgeting purposes, how have you thought about allocating capital between product development and sales and marketing?
That was another big mistake that I did. The whole project is bootstrapped with my money. It's always $1 million that of my money that went in there in a 3-year development, because we added this, we added that, and we had to make sure that any kind of misuse is eliminated as best as we can from both sides, right? from the marketplace partners, but also from the users. There's black sheep everywhere. So it took about 3 years for the whole development of everything. But then the money was gone. So all we did is during the development, we launched, we said we need to test the water because our team and a lot of my friends across the globe, they were very enthusiastic about it. Say, yeah, we support you and so on and so forth. But we didn't do a survey, right? A proper survey to know, okay, is this really welcome with people? So we launched a press release. And this is what I said earlier in this press release, the famous consumer newspapers in Germany, 15 of them, they reported very excited about what we do. And then within 2 days, there were about 2,500 readers who signed up on the system. So there was, if you translate it, every 90 seconds, one new user, actually. And it was just, the system was not even finished, right? So that was the only thing that we spent for marketing, because then I ran out of the budget was gone. I said, that's until how far I can go with my own money. Now we have to bring investors on board and help us with marketing. And what I realized too late is that marketing is even more important than your product. So even if your product is not perfect, but marketing. So that's the biggest thing. And we didn't have money for that. So that's why the idea is to use this affiliate marketing strategy and to bring investors on board who would help us with marketing, with PR, communication. Analysts need to be brought on board and all this kind of thing. So communication, marketing, advertising is key. And that's why it was hard to get where we are. We are pretty well known in Europe, even here in the US, through different press releases that people did for us. Like here, Forbes reported about it. CEO Weekly in the UK reported about it recently, about what we want to accomplish. So there is a lot of attention from governments. German government, for instance, was beside them inviting us or me for the Viva Technology event in Paris as German delegate. They already paid for a project with Deloitte Consulting. And as you know, daily rates, consulting rates from Deloitte are not the lowest ones, right? But this was a 3-month project. They wanted to find out, hey, is this what Manfred says? Is this really so unique? Does it have potential in the market? What needs to be done? And are people really excited? So we did, with Deloitte, we did surveys about, okay, under what conditions and what would be the percentage of willingness of regular drivers to sign up? Would they really do this? And what are they asking for to provide their data? The same thing with this type of cities. So they asked their account managers who are connected to the OEMs, to the cities, to insurance companies, auto clubs, dealerships. And they asked them, that data that we have here, is that interesting? And that, well, that would be perfect if we have that data. And so because of that project, we went even deeper and said, okay, what do we need to do in terms of competing with the current insurances? The insurance have telematic tariffs. You're probably aware of this telematics. But this requires a dongle, and the problem with all this thing is the insurance has your data. You don't even know which data they take from you, but they have it, they store it, and you don't know what they do with it, right? And that's why it is, Germans are very skeptical about it. But what we want to do is really to say, hey, we need to bring up an app that works like the insurance app and other organizations app. It's just better and it's private. It provides you an automated emergency call on the phone for all the cars. It provides you environmentally friendly tips and cost-saving tips, and it gives you a score about your driving. And also that is basically the whole design was done by Deloitte. And I said, okay, now you know what you have to do, right? rewrite the app that you have, get rid of the hardware, get rid of the OBD dongle. OBD stands for onboard diagnostic dongle that we had to provide to the to the users. No more, we stopped all that, and now we are rewriting it according to the design and the ideas from Deloitte.
Wow. Manfred, super insightful. You know, I'd heard that this segment of the market exists, but I didn't realize how involved it is. And so really excited to hear that the work that you're doing and what I'm sure is going to evolve to be, you know, very significant as infrastructure matures as well. Now, before we wrap up, one of the questions I love to ask guests is if you had an opportunity to go back and have a conversation with your younger self, what would you share?
My younger self, I would probably encourage everyone and myself to start as soon as possible. Don't wait until, well, the thing is there's always pros and cons, right? So if you have this experience that I bring to the table because of all my history and corporate history, that's a very valuable asset. But on the other hand, if you're younger, you have just not that kind of financial burden anymore, right? So if you're not married, if you don't have a family, you don't have any kind of a homes or something, you're actually more or less free. And that's the thing where that's the right time to really get dedicated, build up your business, make sure that you check if that is welcomed by your users, because that's the most important thing. And then get going and don't look back, right? There's always mistakes, don't make them twice. But at the end of the day, it's really about being consistent, being dedicated to this, and persistent, I should say. And that is how I would do it if I was still younger. But again, it just makes it a bit more cumbersome, maybe, and more difficult when it comes to your own money, your life savings that you now save spend on this project. And I don't do it for me to become wealthy and rich. I really do this because I believe it's for a good cause. I want to help people. I want to change the world to the better. I want to contribute towards sustainability and less carbon emission. I want people to remember that, this was the guy who initiated all that, right? and that's why I believe passion, and again, passion is what you need to bring to the table. And that is not depending on age.
I think it's great advice and insight. And I think especially when we're younger, we're in this great position to take risk. You know, if we can find something we're passionate about, we should really consider doing so. If there are any of our listeners who would like to participate in My Audit Data or get a hold of you, how can they do so?
Well, the easiest way is to email or on LinkedIn. My profile, you can welcome to share my profile. And my email is mhh@myautodata.com.
Fantastic. Again, for our listeners, Manfred Heist, founder of My Auto Data and president of Mod Incorporated. Manfred, thank you for being a guest on our podcast. Appreciate your time.
You're very welcome. Thanks. Appreciate your time. Okay.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinTrap Management. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag innovators and investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.